ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
David Hale, college basketball, college football, all the major college sports, they're now in the middle of their first full offseason under the new name, image, and likeness rules that went into effect last summer. And how would you sort of sum up how all of this has been going so far?
So the words that are continually used that I actually now think we need, like every sports writer, media personality needs to have like a swear jar on their desk that they have to put money into when they say Wild West. It is the Wild West. It's the Wild West.
It's so wild.
It is indicative of sort of how people are viewing it in that we're seeing 130 FBS schools effectively playing by 130 different sets of rules, philosophies, guidelines. There is not a whole lot of guidance or rules, and the ones that do exist are virtually unenforceable. So, long story short, we have the Wild West, except there's, I don't think there's a sheriff riding into town with a few guns blazing to fix all of this.
Yeah, David, that sheriff died, or he never existed, maybe. We've been waiting for him in college sports for decades. But I want to acknowledge here, too, right? There is a lot of good, and there is a lot of bad, and there is a lot of ugly here, right? It's great that college athletes are being paid. We both agree on this. But the bad and the ugly, I mean, the vacuum of authority that you just described here, it's led to a remarkable and, yes, incredibly wild set of weeks here.
If you want to take it from strictly how much are people talking about college football in May, it's been good, right? The bad and the ugly of this is largely coming from the adults in the room bending, stretching, and outright breaking the rules as much as they possibly can to gain an advantage. This just feels so indicative of so much change happening all at one time, and it feels like a gut punch to, I think, fans who are used to a sport having at least some semblance of a foundation, of a structure. And lately, it just feels like anything goes.
The conversation around name, image, and likeness rules are often framed as a showdown, this loser-leaves-town duel between the heroes who want to pay college athletes and the villains who don't. And after decades upon decades of exploiting an unpaid labor force, I get why. But it turns out that the reality of this surging new economy is not nearly so binary. It's actually messy, more than anything. Really, really messy. Especially with the development of the transfer portal, creating something resembling free agency for the players who step through those swinging doors. So today, David Hale walks us through what's really happening, the hidden costs to the athletes themselves, and the best way to fix a system that feels broken already. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, May 10th. This is ESPN Daily. So, David Hale, you cover college football for ESPN. But you have also been covering exhaustively the new name, image, and likeness revolution as closely as anybody that I've read. And so I'm hoping that you can just help us here make sense of an economy that I'm still trying to wrap my brain around. And it seems like the best case study for that, it might be the story of Jordan Addison at the University of Pittsburgh. So who is he exactly and what's his whole deal?
So Jordan Addison, the fact that I even have to explain who he is, I think, to a national audience speaks to a little bit of the problem here. But but let's go ahead and do that, which is he is a receiver for the Pitt Panthers, who last year won the ACC, played in the Peach Bowl, probably would have won the Peach Bowl had they not gotten down to their third-string quarterback. But he was the Biletnikoff winner last year. I think he finished with 16 touchdown receptions.
Rolling on the run. Corner of the end zone. Addison beats the safety.
Welcome to the Jordan Addison Show. You need a home run, Addison is your guy.
Just one of the most dynamic receivers in college football.
And coming back to make the catch is Addison. And he's off to the races. Jordan Addison, touchdown Panthers. And may have just run them all the way to the ACC. AFC Championship game.
Probably not as high profile a guy because he was playing at Pitt, but a genuinely, genuinely talented guy who will probably be a first round draft pick in the NFL draft next year. The interesting thing here is we have heard rumors and rumblings that he had offers, NIL offers of $3 million, a home, all of this stuff, and maybe to go to USC. Pat Narduzzi, the coach at Pittsburgh, has suggested that USC's new coach, Lincoln Riley, was tampering. You certainly can't prove that, but the fact that we all have heard USC and $3 million before he was even in the portal suggests maybe that occurred. but what is NIL, right? It stands for name, image, and likeness. And what that was intended to mean was that athletes, just like every other person in the world, could profit off of their name, image, and likeness. So if they wanted to do a commercial, they can get money for it. If they wanted to hold a football clinic for kids, they could get paid for it.
If they wanted to, you know, advertise on behalf of a local auto dealership, they could finally do that above board.
Absolutely. And I think most people would suggest that was a necessary thing, a good thing, and in so many cases has been very positive, particularly when you look in women's sports.
Yes.
But now I would ask you this, that I just had to explain to you who Jordan Addison is, would lead most people to believe that his popularity is not such that he commands $3 million a year for his name, image, and likeness. And so I think most people would look at that and say, well, that $3 million, that's not for his name, image, and likeness. And that's not for him to endorse a auto dealership in Southern California where there are much, much, much bigger stars. That's for him to go play wide receiver for the Trojans and win some football games. And the inference that is being made there, I think, is where people start getting very uncomfortable.
Yeah, there is a lack of honesty that you're describing here around what is actually being paid for. And yeah, I know, it's shocking, right? Lack of honesty in college football. Who would have thunk it, David Hale?
First time for everything, Pablo.
But even this concept of a transfer portal, which is its own, like, very disruptive, game-changing concept, and then to tampering now, I mean, just clarify here what tampering, a term borrowed from the professional world of sports, what that really consists of here in college football now.
So theoretically, the rule is that until a player's name is entered into the database, the transfer portal database, other programs are not supposed to be having contact with that player. But as we all know, that's a pretty ridiculous standard because most players aren't going to just go jump into the portal without having at least some idea that there's interest from some other school. And as we know, through so much of the just horror stories we've heard about recruiting and AAU basketball and all of the tales that any casual sports fan has undoubtedly heard over the years, that there's so many intermediaries. You know, it's a booster for school X calls up the high school coach who knows the athlete on the other campus, and there's no promises, but it's like, hey, you know, my school might be interested. Why don't you tell him that and see what his response? There's just no way to police that. It's impossible. And
no.
So that's the first thing. What's changed is that part of those conversations now include school X is interested in you, and that interest might come with a $500,000 check involved.
And so as the closest thing to a free market is developing in, again, this very unregulated way, David, the people who are ostensibly responsible for the regulation, what are they saying about what's happening in front of them?
There's a great Simpsons episode where it's a flashback to Ned Flanders as a kid and his parents are these hipsters. And they're talking to a doctor trying to figure out what to do because this kid's out of control. And the quote is,
"You've got to help us, Doc. We've tried nothing and we're all out of ideas."
And that to me is exactly where we're at with the NCAA right now and the powers that be. We knew NIL was coming for years. We knew that there was inherently going to be some quote-unquote unintended consequences, as much as I hate that term. The NCAA and its member institutions did nothing to get out in front of it all along. They were waiting for the federal government to step in with some sort of guidelines. What happened was last summer, federal government said, we're not going to do that. We've got bigger problems. And at the same time, there was a court case that went to the Supreme Court, the Alston ruling, the Alston versus the NCAA, in which the Supreme Court unanimously, and that's not a thing that happens very often, agreed that the NCAA was in violation of antitrust rights in terms of restricting how much educational benefits a school could provide for an athlete. But within that ruling, Justice Kavanaugh also wrote his own concurring opinion that more or less just said, hey, antitrust lawyers, doors open, come sue the NCAA at your pleasure. Mm. And because of that, the NCAA has been terrified to restrict anything, to put any regulations or restrictions onto athletes, or to enforce much of anything, because they are worried that the next court case is the one that effectively unravels amateurism as a whole. What I think has happened is this sort of perfect storm of the Alston ruling, the new NIL rules, and the fact that they allowed transfers, a free one-time transfer without having to sit out a year. These all happened within the span of about a month and a half last summer. And right. As you can see, the sort of overlap of that Venn diagram creates this huge problem. So where are we at right now? Nobody in administration is happy about it. And even schools that are potentially in a very good position to benefit from it, Georgia and Kirby Smart, Alabama and Nick Saban, have spoken out pretty harshly against the world that we're currently living in. Nick Saban calling it unsustainable. Dabo Swinney at Clemson has spoken about how much he doesn't like the way that we've gotten away from tying anything to education or academics, and it's become very much a professional model. So just within the past week, the commissioner from the Pac-12, George Kliavkoff, and Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, went to D.C. to once again beg federal lawmakers, help us, please. We've tried nothing, and we're all out of ideas.
Yeah, I mean, it seems telling, David, that what the NCAA is calling what they're trying right now, they're calling it guidance, because yesterday they didn't actually issue any new rules, but they did offer guidance, quote unquote, via this memo that they sent to schools. And their guidance is just that the scenario you laid out, where an individual booster dangles NIL money to recruit a player, that is not allowed. But I will confess that the prospect of realistically trying to enforce any of this, it just kind of makes me laugh, right? Like, to borrow from your favorite show again, I'm just Nelson Muntz over here going to all these administrators who are now desperately trying to figure out what their jobs actually involve. But in fairness, at the same time, I also do want to acknowledge that there are lots of other people, like fans in particular, who are legitimately worried about how exactly the sport is changing. And so how are Pitt fans, for instance, feeling as all of this is unfolding?
Speaking of Nelson Muntz, there's another good episode where he points at himself in the mirror and says, ha ha, and then says, wait, that hurts. No wonder nobody came to my birthday party. And yes. I feel like that's Pitt right now, you know? Like, they were all laughing too until it happened to them. And I think this is why the Jordan Addison situation has resonated, and resonated beyond just Pitt, quite frankly, is that a lot of the people who were pointing and laughing suddenly realized all at once, wait a minute, that can happen to us too.
Mm.
Particularly in this case, Jordan Addison, one, was already an established good player and an already likely first-round draft pick. He didn't need to do a ton to change his profile. Two, he's playing on a team that just won a Power 5 conference and is favored to be in competition to do that again this year. And three, it all sort of happened in this very nebulous, gross way where he wasn't even in the portal and sources are saying this is happening and the feel of tampering going on. And then the money that was being talked about was so staggering to a lot of fans that everyone who isn't like an Alabama fan or Ohio State or USC took a step back and said, well, what's the point of us finding talent and developing them and helping them become stars and investing in them as fans, if as soon as they hit that peak level, out the door they go for a bunch of money to a bigger program? I think that it resonated with a lot of people who even before were like, exactly like you, like, good, let's see the NCAA get their comeuppance. I'm right there with the players. This is long overdue. Oh, wait, no, not my guy. Don't do it to me. And that's where we're at.
Right, because even if you believe, by the way, even if you're a cynical person, David, who has always sort of assumed that college football is this sort of like hegemonic sport ruled by an upper class that sort of lords over everybody, the Alabamas and so forth, it does feel like this part of it is pushing that reality to an even more kind of shameless level.
There's a, so I had a rather extensive Twitter thread the other day, as I am want to do, because I have a masochist complex or something. It's just I need public feedback shaming me. But I had this thread where I tried to figure out, why has this one resonated at a different level? What I came to was this idea of suspended disbelief, which, if you're in the writing profession, storytelling profession, you ask your audience to understand, okay, reality is this, but I'm going to set that aside for right now to buy into this narrative that you're telling.
Yes.
And to me, suspended disbelief is essential to being a sports fan. It is the reason I grew up a Cubs fan, and it is the reason for the first 30 plus years of my life, I could start off a baseball season feeling like maybe I had hope, even though of course I didn't.
Correct.
This is what college football is. It is an oligopoly to some extent, where you have the 7 to 10 teams that really have a shot every year. And then everybody else needs to create some narrative to get enthusiastic and excited about. And that is where the suspended disbelief comes into. And this process exposed sort of as the, how the sausage gets made enough, or showed, you know, the guy pulling the strings behind the scenes enough that it's hard to have that suspended disbelief. This, to me, was an entire swath of fans, not just in Pittsburgh, noticing that their sense of suspended disbelief was just ripped away from them. And then seeing for the first time, the emperor has no clothes, so to speak. I'm mixing analogies a lot right now.
Yeah, David, look, you should know by now that this podcast is a safe space for mixed metaphors. But there is also, to your point, a nakedness, a certain nudity of ambition here that is not necessarily what people originally signed up for. And we had not even detailed, by the way, how far boosters have been trying to push those boundaries. So let's do that after the break.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
And so in all of this, David, and all of it, by the way, has been very confusing, even for someone like me who's trying to keep up with all of this stuff. But I'm looking at this headline at The Athletic, and it was from earlier this year, and it says this, quote, five-star recruit in class of 2023 signs agreement with Collective that could pay him more than $8 million. And there's a lot more details from there, but one of the details that we do not get is the name of the athlete in question. But all of this stuff happening without full clarity, what is your understanding of what this deal really is?
So this gets at where I think might be one of the less talked about or least talked about problems with this whole situation, with this quote-unquote Wild West. So you would think $8 million to a recruit, that the one winner in this deal is the recruit, right? Because there's no guarantees he's going to be good. So, boy, that seems like a risky $8 million investment. You'd feel like, boy, that's a gross thing to be having a collective, which we haven't really talked about collectives, but effectively what this is a group of boosters for individual schools getting together, pooling their money, and then creating out of thin air name, image, and likeness opportunities that they are effectively overpaying for in order to lure a recruit to that school. So it's like, hey, you know, we're going to give you $1 million for these 10 speaking engagements in Austin, Texas that are set throughout the year. And, you know, since you're going to be in Austin anyway, have you considered enrolling at Texas and playing for the Horns? That would probably be convenient for you for these speaking engagements we need you to do.
Wait, so this scenario, David, you're outlining here where there's a prospective player who is not at the school yet being tempted by an NIL deal, that according to the guidance issued by the NCAA yesterday, again, that is against the rules. And also, again, we know that it's going to be really hard to police that. But even when this is totally above board, when a collective is working with an athlete who's already enrolled at the school in question, it does almost feel like the collective is in effect becoming the player's de facto employer, right?
Correct. Absolutely. And this is where I think we get into some dangerous territory. So what is a collective? It's an utterly unregulated employer service right now, almost like a third party. It's kind of like a super PAC in politics where they're not allowed to directly communicate with the school.
For years, David, I think all of college football has been crying out for super PACs. Yes. And I'm glad we're here.
We all looked at election season and said, how can we make things more like that? What do we do about that? But the funny sort of analogies with this is like they're not allowed to directly communicate theoretically with the school. Ugh. And so I've heard stories of coaches being like, I don't want this guy. I didn't want to offer him. And our damn collective just went out and offered him $50,000 to come to our school. I don't want him on my roster. But this is where we're at. So this is a completely unregulated market. And then who are the players? Well, the players are often 17, 18, 19-year-old guys who, you know, I don't know about your experience. I didn't have a lot of contract law understanding when I was that age.
No, David, I was very much Homer Simpson trying to figure out money versus peanuts.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, $20. I wanted a peanut.
$20 can buy many peanuts. Explain how. Money can be exchanged for goods and services.
Woohoo! Money can be exchanged for goods and services. So this is sort of where it gets really potentially problematic. So who are the players how are they dealing with this? Well, maybe mom and dad are working on it for them, or they can hire an agent, but it's not like an agent in the pros. An agent, first of all, you can't hire an agent who will also represent you in the pros.
Mm.
You can't have a contract that extends beyond their time in college. So some of them are just these fly-by-night, like, dude in his mom's basement that is saying, I can be your agent and do this. Some of them are like former players and teammates that are like, I want to get into the agent game. I'll do this for you. But they don't know what they're talking about.
Yes, yes, I will be a paid intermediary who is basically just a fig leaf covering the reality of this.
And because it's not a typical employment contract like you would get in the NFL or Major League Baseball, the percentage take that might be happening here could be way off. I mean, typically an agent might be taking 5% at the NFL level. Here, they might be taking 25%. And they might not know what the heck they're doing in the first place. And so it's an unregulated market with young, enthusiastic people hoping to make their mark and getting money for the first time, with agents who don't know what they're doing, and kind of shady business people running a collective who are purposefully writing nebulous contracts because they can't put in print what they're actually paying for.
And also the business itself has not existed long enough for there to be like best practices about how much to charge for anything.
Exactly. And so effectively what you get here is the narrative thread of every VH1 Behind the Music that aired in the 1990s. It is every band who has ever been ripped off in a bad contract that they signed for their first deal or whatever. So there are lots of players. I mean, it's great to look at a guy and say like, hey, this recruit might be getting $8 million. But read the fine print. And we have not seen a lot of fine print, right? So these contracts are not being made public. Who knows what this means for a lot of these guys down the road? And who knows what kind of rights they're signing away when they sign up for all of this? It is not just a thing where the coaches and admins are sort of finally getting their just desserts for a flawed system. But by not giving any protections to the players in this process, it leaves them at a relatively high risk too. And that part really has not been discussed very much.
And it also feels, David, like this is kind of what capitalism would look like if it were to crawl out of the primordial ooze of a world in which it was banned previously. Like, yes, everybody's rushing in trying to profit. And how many people on the NIL collective concept are rushing in on that? Like, how widespread is that?
It's very widespread. And at last count that I read was close to, if not over, 100 schools now that have them.
Wow.
There are schools that have multiple ones. There's competing collectives on the same campuses. So, I mean, it's prevalent. And what they actually are doing or how much they have is a big question mark, too. So some of them, Michigan, for example, kind of started a collective early on with relatively good intentions of saying, we're going to start working with athletes in training them and how to build a brand and create marketing opportunities. And it was more of sort of an educational cooperative and a way to sort of connect the possible spokesperson with the product type of thing. But that became much more nebulous as people realized, like, ooh, this is a as you say, when capitalism evolves into reality, the black market is often the first market that comes up. And that's kind of what has been created here. And then there's the other question of how sustainable are these collectives? Because when boosters are being asked, can you give $1 million for this building that we're building? Well, okay, that might be a big ask, but we build a building and then there it is. And then you don't ask me for $1 million for that building every year afterwards. This is a different thing. And if a booster collective today at Texas or Texas A&M or Alabama is already shelling out tens of millions of dollars a year, where is that money going to keep coming from? And I think at some schools, the answer is there's people with more money than they can possibly spend and it'll be there. But at a lot of schools, I just don't know how it's possibly sustainable. What we're arguing about NIL payments is helping to sort of obfuscate what is the larger discussion of, like, why aren't schools just paying them directly? Why aren't their actual employers paying their employees a proper wage? And if we could have that discussion, I think everybody ends up in a bigger, better place.
Yeah, you wind up thinking to yourself, is there a way to do this better? Like, there have to be different rituals that get us to a different system that gets to a place of greater fairness. And I want to try and get to that place with you, David, after the break.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, David, it does occur to me that we have not really talked about the on-field dynamics that follow all of the off-field stuff that we've been chronicling here. And I'm curious, at this moment in time, what it's like to be in a locker room as a player, but also as a coach, as, you know, capitalism is in its own kind of pseudo-capitalistic way, in this case, kind of consuming everything.
Yeah, and this is, I think, another part of the story that it's not being well told right now. And part of it is because, look, when somebody's got a contract issue at the pro level, they let you know about it, or their agent lets you know about it. It's not usually a secret. What do you do at the college level? There's very little direct access that we have to players. It is hard as a media member to get a player in a position where he can speak honestly, because if there's not a PR person looking over his shoulder, then even if the quote comes out, what kind of trouble is he going to get in with coaches for saying the wrong thing? It's problematic because I think we have a lot of people saying this is great for players. We don't have a lot of players saying this is great for players. And I have talked to a few players who have said, look, I don't like this. It's not that I'm against guys getting paid. I'd like to get paid. I've worked on some NIL deals. Like, I want guys to get paid. But I don't like every morning having to wake up and wonder who's still on my team. And I think that's inherently part of the problem. And so we're hearing this from players. And then you put yourself in the coach's position. I don't think anybody, again, we've talked a lot about how nobody has to feel bad for the administrators and the coaches who are already well paid and have maintained a problematic system for too long. So I don't expect anyone to shed any tears here. But when you think about what a college football coach prizes the most, it's not wins, it's not money, it is consistency. They just want to know what to expect for the day. There's nothing a coach hates more than the unexpected. And it has been just wild for them to try to put together a roster because, A, you're essentially recruiting your high school athletes, you're recruiting the transfer portal, and you're recruiting your own roster to keep those guys from leaving. And on top of that, a year and a half ago, the NCAA came out and decided we're going to give everyone an extra year of eligibility because of COVID. And so you have guys that are still around that wouldn't have been in years past. The idea of roster management is total chaos for coaches right now. And it does have an on-field. I mean, if you're a fan, you don't feel bad necessarily for a coach, but that is changing the product on the field that we're going to see this fall.
Yeah, two things, David. Number one, swear jar. You said wild. Number two, yes, the game itself, regardless of the normative, like, is this preferable or not given alternatives, it's pretty undeniable that the thing you liked is not the same thing anymore, for better and for worse.
Right. And this is what I've tried to really explain to people is, like, I'm not advocating one way or another necessarily here. I'm just asking for people not to look at it in a binary way. It's not good and it's not bad. It's a little of everything. And I think until you address some of the bad parts of this and say, how can we fix them? It is a risk of it being a net bad or a net good. It could still be. I'm not in any way advocating that all of this is bad, that we need to go back to the way that we did it before. A, it's not happening, and B, that wasn't good either. But I do think we've got to look at the way that things are happening now and say there's obvious flaws here that require being addressed. And is there anyone in a position of power with enough grace and strength and thoughtfulness to stand up and say, here's how we fix this, and I don't care if it's risky, I'm going to go out and start working on doing it now.
The question of, is this a net positive or a net negative? This entire NIL revolution for college football and college basketball and the major sports in particular, that's where the question of what the remedy is comes into play most glaringly. And so what do you do, David, if you are that person with grace and strength and diplomacy and thoughtfulness? What would you be exploring here in terms of those risks you just alluded to?
I think there are some short-term things that can happen that will help. There's reports out there, and I've talked to some coaches, that there is some momentum behind the idea of creating transfer portal windows, which theoretically might remove the 365-day-a-year free agency period and slim it down so at least coaches know, well, if guys are going to leave, this is when it's going to happen. I think in the long term, though, the only way to end a black market is to create a true, genuine, free, and open market. And that means paying players directly from the schools, allowing them to potentially unionize, to have a collectively bargained agreement that says these are the rules we're all going to work by, that when they sign a contract with a school for 3 years, they've got to stay at that school for 3 years or provide some compensation to the school for leaving. Just essentially the way the pros work. I don't know how close we are to being there because I know a Twitter poll is hardly scientific, but I asked my followers, what's sort of your red line on college football and paying players? Close to 90% said, like, I'm okay with some form of paying players. Some wanted it more or less tied to education, but at some point they were like, if a school's paying players, that's fine with me. Almost 90%. And I saw a survey of ADs that came out recently too, where close to 90% of them said they're not okay with paying players and treating them as employees. So when you see that dynamic, that's the bridge that needs to be crossed here, is getting the powers that be in college sports to just change the mindset and say, like, this isn't working. It's not sustainable. we've got to just give in on this thing that we have been steadfast on for so long and say, here's the new way of doing it, and we'll get behind that. How close we are to that, I don't know, because the fact of the matter is, for all the complaints that are happening out there right now, most of the bigger schools and the power conferences are still making a whole heck of a lot of money, even as things feel like they're kind of crumbling apart around them.
And I imagine part of what informs your tolerance for whether you're in favor as a fan or administrator in favor of paying players is how much money do you have to pay them? And that obviously brings up the logical follow-up here, which is this notion of like a super league, a Champions League of Power Five schools that have the resources, that have the wherewithal, that might just break away and do their own professionalized thing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are starting to kind of view that as an inevitability. Whether that inevitability is 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now, I think most people see this as the only true path. It's funny, you know, so last summer when the news came out about Texas and Oklahoma moving to the SEC and the obvious extrapolation of what kind of dollars that would mean for that league, I talked to a coach and I said, like, what are they going to do with all this? If these schools are getting $100 million a year in TV revenue each, how are you going to spend all that money if you're not paying the players? You can only build so many buildings. And he said, yes, exactly. They're going to be paying the players. And there's reports out there that the Big Ten is on the verge of $1 billion-plus media rights deal coming up soon, too. I mean, the money is so big in the SEC and the Big Ten, and those other three leagues are just not in a position to keep pace with that. And so I think there's already the discussion that it's not a Power Five, it's a Power Two. And then if we switch to a model where players are being paid, I mean, quite frankly, there are programs, the Florida States, Clemson's, Miami, Oklahoma State, USC, UCLA, schools like that that consider themselves within a title hunt in any particular year, have that history and expect to be playing at the highest level, they're going to say, I can't play at the highest level under the conditions I'm in. And it seems unsustainable for those conferences to continue as they have. So where does it go? But the question is when that happens and what it looks like when we get there and how much damage to the sport's overall credibility happens between now and then.
And this is where you just got to hope, David, that somewhere in college football there is, you know, a Lisa Simpson in charge as opposed to a Ralph Wickham.
It's not the hero we want, but it's the hero we need.
David Hale, thank you for choosing to come on ESPN Daily.
Oh, that was beautiful. I'm happy to end on a Simpsons reference. I love it.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.